Peter Ühling of the Berlin Philharmonic contends Bach's Goldberg Variations are a musical peak that almost all major pianists have attempted to scale over the course of time. A fascinating piece that continues to hold mysteries to this day. In 1741, a new work by J.S. Bach was published by the Nuremberg music engraver Balthasar Schmidt. Aria with diverse variations for a harpsichord with two manuals, composed for music lovers to refresh their spirits. Later, this work was given the more manageable title, The Goldberg Variations. The name is related to the circumstances in which it was written, at least if we believe Johann Nikolaus Forkel, who was the composer's first biographer. According to his book published in 1802, the Goldberg Variations are, thanks to the initiative of the former Russian ambassador to the Electoral Court of Saxony, Count Kaiserling. The Count was often ill, and according to Forkel, often had sleepless nights. Johann Gottlieb Goldberg, the Count's private musician who lived in his house, had to spend the night in an antechamber so as to play for him. Once the Count mentioned in Bach's presence that he'd like to have some clavier pieces for Goldberg, which should be of such a gentle and somewhat lively character that he might be a little cheered up by them in his sleepless nights. The variations consequently take their popular name from their supposed first player. No one knows where Forkel got this story. Perhaps it was told to him by Bach's eldest sons, who were, however, long gone from Leipzig at the time the work was written. Were these intended as soothing sleep music? Forkel's story is often smugly distorted in the sense that the Count ordered music to put him to sleep. Even Glenn Gould, we're hearing him here, long considered the best interpreter of the work, read from Forkel's account that the variations were ordered as soothing sleeping pills. In fact, Forkel's report says the opposite, as the Count actually ordered some clavier pieces that he might be a little cheered up by them in his sleepless nights. Chronic insomnia is a torment and can lead to depression, so the Count's request is by no means frivolous, but has an almost mythological or biblical dimension. When the evil spirit from God was upon Saul, that David took an harp and played with his hand, so Saul was refreshed and was well, and the evil spirit departed from him. This account from the 16th chapter of the first book of Samuel was considered in the Baroque period to be one of the central sources on the spiritual effects of music. In his major study on the concept of music in the German Baroque, musicologist Rolf Dahmann summarizes, "In particular, it is melancholy, madness, and irascibility that are effectively counteracted by music." The Italian pianist Beatrice Rana recorded the Goldberg Variations on her second CD in 2017 and emphasized her private affinity with this work. Lang Lang even had the journey to his performance of the Goldberg Variations documented in a film. Perhaps this urge for personal testimony shows how strongly this intimate music still moves the soul, how deeply it touches the innermost part of the human being. But perhaps that is precisely what Bach intended and Count Kaiserling wished for. Words of Peter Ühling of the Berlin Philharmonic in an essay titled Brightening Up Sleepless Nights, suggesting the Goldberg Variations by Bach are not a soporific, but rather music of the night to lift the listener's mood, offering comfort perhaps, creating a space for introspection, and even a sense of protection. we're invited to an introspective nocturne-filled evening to lift our spirits with lovely music by Bach, Beethoven, Debussy, and more in a program titled Cello Starry Night, featuring Noelle Casella-Grand, assistant principal cellist with the Northeastern Pennsylvania Philharmonic, and guest pianist Sebastian Grand on January 16th at St. Luke's Church in Scranton. We had a chance to speak by phone with Noelle about her life in music and the program she and Sebastian will present 1 week from tonight.
I started with piano when I was really little, maybe about 5, and then decided to add cello to the mix when I was about 8. And I was kind of forced into the piano practice, and I'm grateful for that now, but cello really spoke to me. And that's actually how I informed choosing this program and how a lot of my program choices are made is because of my love for the voice of the cello. So yeah, that actually started really young, around 8 for me.
Did you have a model? Was there someone you heard who swept you away, or was it just you and the instrument, or you and your teacher that drew you to the instrument?
I think because I was actually, now people wouldn't describe me as shy, but when I was little, I think I found it very difficult to kind of speak my feelings and everything. And because the cello is so emotional and evocative in that way, I think just hearing it in a couple of concerts and a couple of CDs and recordings and maybe around the house, it really just spoke to like the inner voice in me. And I just, you know, I didn't want to practice all the time, but I loved the sound, the voice of the cello, definitely.
And we know what a wonderful school Sarah Lawrence is. What did you pursue there? Did you really go into music performance there, or did you minor in other things? What did you explore there?
Yeah, so that was a wonderful experience for me. As most people know, Sarah Lawrence is a very special school. It's not for everybody, but it definitely was for me. As a learner and as like a, you know, world citizen, I think a place like Sarah Lawrence is wonderful because I had a truly holistic education and I wasn't totally ready to go into music. Technically, I wasn't there yet to go to music school and I didn't really actually want to be there. So I did kind of a very mixed pot of coursework, very heavy in performance and in music, but also a number of philosophy classes, and I also studied the Italian language as well. So it all kind of melded into my current situation where I travel a lot and use my brain and enjoy writing still. So I'm very grateful for that education and espouse it to anyone who was even slightly interested in going there. I talk wonderfully about Sarah Lawrence.
And was it something there that pointed you to the Royal Academy of Music?
Well, actually, there's a large population of students that study abroad while at Sarah Lawrence. I went to Amsterdam for a year and studied at the conservatory there. So that opened up my eyes to being in Europe. And although I took a number of auditions in the U.S. and was interested in New York and California and a number of other places, the draw of going back to Europe was quite strong for me. And I just had to go back. So I took my audition for Royal Academy in New York during my senior year at Sarah Lawrence. And they told me I was offered a spot on the day. So I said, that's a sign to go. And so I kind of like to take life as it comes in that way and just go for things. Because I feel like if something's offered, there's a reason, you know.
We know that Amsterdam is quite a home for early music performers and performances. Was that something you encountered in your year there?
Yes, so that was an interesting year. I did more Baroque cello. I did some viola da gamba actually when I was in New York with a lovely teacher who's now since passed, Judith Davidoff. She was a wonderful mentor to me. But my time in Amsterdam actually was more on the contemporary side. So there's a huge new music scene in Holland, and I really took advantage of that and explored more on the kind of jazz and improv side, along with, of course, my classical studies. But I did Baroque cello studies when I was in London, too. So I tried to keep that all as part of my, you know, like I said, my holistic musical education. So I've kind of dabbled in everything at this point.
And education was always important to you?
Yes. So I started teaching for a woman that I was taking lessons with. She gave me a couple of her younger students over the summer when she would be away so that they could continue lessons. And that was like maybe when I was 16, something like that. So I started teaching quite young and was entrusted by someone quite young to do that. And I really enjoyed it always, actually. And it's something that not only is my as you know, as a musician, we talk about, well, it's so hard. It is difficult to be a musician, but if you're smart about it and if you learn to enjoy the multitude of aspects of being a musician, which for me is a lot of different faces and different roles, I really do enjoy teaching, and I think the rewards and the benefits go back and forth between teacher and student, and I've seen students fly off to incredible places and come back and share those things with me, and it's incredibly rewarding, and I really, truly, deeply enjoy teaching a lot.
When we interview photographers, listeners always want to know, yes, but what camera do they use? And it's similar with musicians. Please introduce us to your cello or cellos.
So I have two very, very different cellos. I'm sitting in my studio in New Hope right now with I call it my second cello, but I actually play on this cello more depending on what the performing season brings up. I have a Lewis and Clark carbon fiber cello, which is black and looks very modern. And I actually have a pickup on it. So I can do electric stuff. So I do a lot of playing with bands and like amplification type things. So this cello comes with me for the more rock and roll side of my life. And we're very good friends in that way. And we enjoy that immensely. My other cello, my concert cello, is an English cello. My second English cello actually is a Forster cello. So it's from 1811 and it's in incredible condition and looks a lot younger than it is, but it has a beautiful depth of sound. And I really enjoy it because it can concertize, you know, it handles concertos. I played Beethoven triple on it, Korngold cello concerto. It handles really big repertoire, but also is really intimate in chamber music settings, which I tend to frequent more often these days.
And did you just find it by chance or did somebody recommend it?
So I had a Hill cello before that, and I had that cello for about 10 years, and I loved it. That and every English cello that I've tried, not only are they're still expensive, but they're infinitely more affordable as for string players than your French or certainly your Italian instruments or some of the German ones. But I love the sound of English instruments and I find the history really fascinating. And of course, my connection to being in the UK for a while. But I decided to move from the Hill to the Forester and trade it in because I just wanted a little bit more power. I felt like the Hill was a beautiful, intimate instrument, but struggled a little bit more when it came to bigger solos. Like I found that it was hard for me to kind of push my sound barrier a little bit. So this Forester definitely gives me everything that I could ever want in an instrument. So I'm very happy to have it.
Well, that's your instrumental partner. Tell us about your partner whose name is Sebastian.
So Seb and I met, we are currently amicably separated, but we have a beautiful co-parenting relationship and have two beautiful boys. But we met in the UK. He went to Royal Academy with me, and we actually played together for over a year before we decided to start dating. And we were in a piano trio. We did competitions. We traveled all over the UK with our violinist, who's still a dear friend of both of ours. And Seb is a wonderful pianist. He's from the Channel Islands. Guernsey, actually, and he grew up in a beautiful place where music was very important. His parents were both involved in music and education, so that was a very big part of his upbringing. And we have spent the last almost 15 years now playing together, so we know each other's playing really, really well, and that can be good and not so good because we know when to anticipate strange things and some things that work really well. So it's fun. We've been playing together for a very long time.
How did you choose a theme? What were you thinking when you talked about planning a program titled Cello Starry Night?
So I think our prompt was something about the sky and the star, something in that way. And so, of course, that got us thinking. Sebastian's actually the genius behind this particular program, but we did talk about what to incorporate in it. But he's also a conductor, so he's very good at coming up with programs. So he's probably the guru, in my opinion, on all those things. But I was interested in the night not as something like dark or dramatic, as it can often be portrayed, but as like a time when things soften and essentially become more truthful. And I think the two composers that I kind of added to the mix when we spoke about the program was Bach and then the Debussy, which I think both respond to the quiet in very different ways. And basically, the program moves between solitude, conversation, and introspection, almost like different stages of the evening. And we've done different programs. We did a recital in Florida a couple months ago, where it was the idea of like the sun moving through a Floridian day. We had some interesting ideas with that. So I find it interesting to bring programs. We like to bring programs that have something that everyone can attach to and see kind of the narrative through, which I think is interesting. So that's our idea.
The Philharmonic season is building to the planets by Gustav Holst. So that's the trajectory the season is on. What pieces were you suggesting for this Starry Night program?
So a couple of these are these little nocturnes we've used as encores in other programs just because they're so beautiful, and some of them are so short that it's hard to essentially program, but this program actually worked beautifully to put a couple of them. So we're playing Bossoir, actually. And interestingly enough, I played an arrangement of this with accordion and vocals for an independent film that's going to be coming out very soon with a good friend of mine, a photographer in New York. So interesting to have it from the perspective that I've always played it, cello voicing it with, you know, solo cello with piano, but to hear it with me kind of mimicking the voice in some spots with accordion in a different setting was very interesting. I did that a couple months ago, so it brings a new understanding of the short beauty of this piece for me.
The list that we have here, Lily Boulanger?
Yeah, so we're doing the Nocturne, which is very, I had never heard this piece. And like, again, I think it ties into this idea that night is not really romantic or dramatic, but suspended and time is essentially barely moving. There's a few passages of like bigger scale moments in here, but it's very breathy phrasing and nothing really forced. So it really tied in nicely to this idea of suspended time through the stillness of the night. So we decided to add that into there as well.
And we see Beethoven?
Yes, the A major, third sonata. Well, that's our big one. And this sonata, 7, I have played a number of times. We've played all of them, but this is our favorite one to play together. I would say that while not explicitly night music, I think it kind of represents the human presence in the program. Warmth, resonance, some wit, maybe. And then, again, the program that will drift into more darkness after it. But I think it needed something kind of big and really representative of what the cello can handle in terms of large-scale rep.
Tchaikovsky is mentioned next.
Yes, so we are doing the Nocturne as well. So interestingly, I think when you were asking me about pieces or things I may have heard when I was younger that got me into cello, I don't remember whose CD it was, but it was a beautiful CD that I used to listen to when I was little, and it was an arrangement of Tchaik's Nocturne for cello. And I remember when I took this out again to put into another program last year, it reminded me of little 8-year-old me listening on speakers and thinking, oh, I'm now playing this, you know? So it's a beautiful piece where emotions surface because there's nowhere left to hide them, basically.
Did you mention Bach? You chose Bach?
Yes. So I am a huge, huge Bach fan. It's probably something that, I mean, I would never begin to say that anyone can master Bach, but it's something that I come back to and back to and back to, as we all do. And I chose to put Bach's first suite in here. I think it's kind of an interesting idea because it's not about darkness, but more about clarity, I think, in the scheme of this program. And I think having physically just one person, in this case me, on the stage is kind of a moment of solitude that kind of mirrors the idea of night, even when the music is more joyful. So it's more of like a visual representation of what the night and the solitude of night can evoke for some of us.
Then, do you know the venue? Do you know St. Luke's Church?
Yes, this is the thing, because this orchestra plays in so many wonderful places. I'm thinking of the church that I believe we did the Requiem. So it was beautiful, and I thought, oh, is this the church that I'm going to do the recital in? It's very resonant and very, of course, it has large lofted ceilings, but it's actually very intimate. The sound is very warm in there, so I think it's absolutely the perfect venue for this recital.
We'll get to hear you in this intimate chamber setting, but then when you do Jurassic Park, will you be a dinosaur? What will you be doing?
Oh, I was thrilled that that was on the program. And I think this is the first season where I actually, first of all, I thought, oh, I can do most of these concerts. Yay, which is always a great thing. But I saw we were doing that. I said, I don't care what else I have in the calendar. This is number one now. Yeah. So I'm going to hopefully bring my kids on the 2-hour trek up because they would love to see that. And I actually haven't played, to be honest with you, the variety of things I've done. I actually haven't done too much music, movie music live with that. So I'm really excited about that, to be honest.
Noelle Casella Grand, assistant principal cellist with the Northeastern Pennsylvania Philharmonic, speaking with us in anticipation of a chamber concert titled Cello Starry Night, January 16th, that's a Friday, 1 week from this evening, at 7. It will take place at St. Luke's Episcopal Church in Scranton, 232 Wyoming Avenue. And she will be joined by pianist Sebastian Grand. And there will be music of Lily Boulanger, a cello sonata by Beethoven, Nocturne by Tchaikovsky, Bonsoir by Debussy, and this Cello Suite No. 1 by Bach. For more information on the web, nepaphil.org, nepaphil.org.